back for 30%. I'm coming back for everything.
You got into Harvard Law?
What, like it's hard?
Scarface on repeat. Scarface on repeat. Constant, y'all.
Catch a painted pony on the spinning wheel ride.
Some people are saying that your new music sounds a lot like Bob Dylan.
Well, maybe Bob Dylan sounds a lot like me.
She doesn't even go here. They knew, and they let it happen.
Oh, and in case I don't see you.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Whoa. Welcome. welcome. This is 94.9 FM Radio Western. This is Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not Elijah Ray.
No, you're not.
I am Ryan, the news and spoken word director here. Elijah's feeling a bit under the weather here.
Oh!
You know, he's not feeling that well, Mike.
He's got a little tummy ache, a little cough. And I decided to take the day off.
So I'm in the captain's chair today.
Yeah.
So we'll see how well this goes.
Oh, it's going to go great.
All right. Yeah. Well, if you guys want to call or text in during... Actually, just text in.
Yeah. Text in.
We don't do the calls.
No.
Don't do the calls.
519-661-3600. I'm Mike, by the way.
And, there we go.
Yeah.
We're getting all... You know, I started doing this thing while you were away for a little bit where I was giving fake names.
That's great.
And I was going to do another one today, but then it's like I can't really do one when I'm in the captain's chair.
You're in the captain's chair. Well, we haven't been all together in I would say a few weeks, right?
Yeah.
I've been away, and then obviously Elijah is away today. We'll be back full throttle.
Next week. Which
so
is also...
I know. This is the segue I was hoping for. That's why you're in the captain's chair. Next week, next Tuesday at 8 p.m., at 8 p.m. sharp, Ryan, Elijah, and myself, Mike, will be hosting a movie trivia night at Holy Diver, which is just off Talbot Street, downtown London. There's going to be some amazing prizes. We're going to be there. It's basically a trifecta of amazing establishments in London. We have Radio Western, of course. We have the Highland Cinema, which is where I work, and then it's being hosted at the venue for the movie trivia night is Holy Diver,
and so, that is on Talbot.
That's on Talbot,
near
that's,
Talbot and King.
Yeah, literally right there. Please come out for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be hosting it. Like I said, tons of great prizes and stuff. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and. Speaking of you being away, of course, there was a very specific reason why you were away.
Yes, there was.
For the little bit. And that's what we'll be discussing today.
Yeah.
Because, Mike, you were at the Toronto International Film Festival, or as people might say, TIFF.
I was at TIFF. And I just wanted to mention, too, before we dive in to TIFF, that, you know, if you are starving for content, yeah,
Elijah just texted in. Damn, I can't even be sick without Mike talking smack.
That's right. I hope your tummy ache is getting better, Elijah. If you're starving for Outside the Frame content, there's a new way you can listen.
Oh my God, you're right.
And so wherever you get your podcasts, look up Outside the Frame.
Yep.
And there's a bunch of episodes on there, previous episodes, a bunch from this year.
Yeah.
And we're just going back. Elijah's just going back through the catalog. I mean, if he was here, he'd have more time to do that and to upload the episodes. But he's not here. But when he is here, he will be going through the episodes.
He has the plague.
And kind of picking some of the best of the last year or so. And we'll be uploading there. And then as things move forward, you can check out the episodes. So if you don't catch them live, you can go and listen to them like podcasts, which is really, really cool. So, yeah, that's a little plug for the Outside the Frame podcast. Now, TIFF. Okay.
TIFF.
There's a lot going on, okay, with TIFF. There's a lot of, for people that don't know, or that maybe are just, you know, on the outside and just kind of hear the name.
Yep.
TIFF is widely considered one of the top sort of five film festivals in the world.
Yes.
But I will get into that because there is like, I think there's there. This year was a really, I think, good indication as to where the festival's headed.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't think it's headed in the way of, it's not really keeping pace with the rest of the big film festivals in the same way. I'm not saying it's less successful.
Okay.
I'm saying that the what they're going for with the festival is much different than maybe what it was 10 years ago. And that will play into some of the films that were there, and I'll talk about some of the vibes and how things are operate there. But I wanted to kind of start things off before we get into the films. I saw 26 films there. I was there for...
That's a lot of films.
Yeah, I was there for essentially 8 days. 8 days and like...
it's so almost three movies a day.
So just over three movies
a
day.
Yeah.
Average. So I was there from like the full days were Thursday to Thursday, and then I did see one movie on the Friday morning, but I left Friday afternoon, so I wasn't there the whole, so it's like 8.2,
something like that. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So essentially it's like an average of three films a day, which is like, those aren't rookie numbers. Those aren't like you're going crazy numbers. But those, the way that the fest ran this year, those are actually, I put up some good numbers, I think, in terms of the amount of movies that I saw, also the eclectic nature of the films that I saw.
Right.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get to everything.
Okay.
That I wanted to get to, most notably Hamnet, which ended up winning the People's Choice Award,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of like Life of Chuck withstanding. Usually the People's Choice Award at TIFF kind of indicates an Oscar or an awards contender.
Right.
So that's kind of how things have been, I don't know, gauged in the past. That being said, I did see the International People's Choice Award winner. Which was Park Chan-wook's No Other Choice. So I did get to see that film. I'm trying to think of a few others that I wasn't able to see that were like big ones. I don't know. That one was definitely a big one that I wasn't able to see.
No.
But anyway, I wanted to kind of get sort of, you know, get the listener acclimated / like get on my soapbox just a little bit as to, and maybe this will kick off some questions you might have.
I do have one question before we get into the films here.
Yeah, go for it.
So you've been to TIFF the last few years now. Was this year any different considering it was the 50th anniversary of the festival?
It didn't feel any different in the sense of like TIFF was TIFFing.
More signage maybe?
Not really, no. It was
the
one large difference, and it was very notable for the first, I would say the first weekend, like the Thursday to the Sunday is when they have like King Street West kind of blocked off.
Right.
And not that they don't do that. They do, like, because there are premieres and stuff during the week, like between the Monday and the Thursday/Friday a little bit. But essentially, like, if there's a premiere during the week, they will just block it off for that specific premiere when the celebs are coming in and then open it back up. So, but during the weekend, it's just closed the whole time. There's a very notable presence there that you couldn't ignore, not only because of the 8 to 10 hour lineup that was there, but it was the Criterion Closet.
Okay, right.
So they set up right on King Street West, and they were slinging physical media.
Nice.
And boy, were they slinging. So at one point, this was told to me on another podcast, actually. But if you showed up at, say, 9:35 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
you weren't able to get in for the full day. So that was too late. Meaning that by five, like basically the line, because everyone is allotted their sort of little time in the closet.
Right,
it's not, you don't just go in and be like, oh, I'm here and then leave. Like people are there taking photos, taking video, selecting the movie. So they take that into consideration. So they kind of do a count of the thing. And then basically you're there, depending on where you're in line, anywhere is between, you know, an hour or so and 8 hours or 9 hours. So if you were one of the last ones that showed up there at 9:30-ish.
So you need to get there at like 6 in the morning.
So, I mean, I was down there pretty early every day. People were basically lining up there right from like 8 o'clock on, 7:45, 8 o'clock on. So that was just like a presence there at TIFF this year that hadn't hadn't been there in years past. Right. Everything else was pretty much the same in the sense of, like, you know, the feel of the festival. Now, there was a couple of internal changes that I noticed, and this is where I'll kind of soapbox it a little bit and also, like, tinfoil hat it a little bit.
Okay.
So there's many different ways you can see movies at TIFF. And I've kind of talked about that in past episodes when I've talked about my time there. The way that I go, and if you're press or industry, if you can get a press industry pass, what that allows you to do is pay a lump sum, and they have what's called press industry screenings for all of the films. And I say all, that started to change last year. But all of the films that are there, they usually get one or two press industry screenings, which means they're not open to the public. They're only open to the people that have the P&I. That's the short form, the P&I mm-hmm. pass. And it's subject to availability. So if there's a really big movie, they can only let in however many seats they have in the theater. So, but you don't have to, like, stand in line for tickets. You don't have to get tickets online. You don't have to pay for anything. You've already paid for that. So that's like the benefit of getting the press industry pass. Secondly, for same day tickets, meaning like on the day, if there's premieres and public screenings and stuff,
right.
we're able to get tickets or try to get tickets for those screenings. We don't have to pay for the ticket, but we still have to acquire a ticket.
Okay.
Okay. So yep. that's kind of how, like, very basically, that's kind of how things are set up on the press industry side of things. They started this thing this year where essentially they would, like, whoever's making the decisions up there would not allow you or the box office to release any tickets to press industry. So if you were trying to get a same day ticket to, like, a really big show, a lot of times they weren't, and most times they actually weren't available or were available for, it was basically like playing the slot machine as to, like, if you called into the box office or said, right. or if you went to the box office or if you checked online. They started doing this. I usually got my tickets online, and there's a way you can do that and refresh the site, and when tickets pop up you can grab them. But they stopped even allowing you to refresh the specific movie you'd like. So they would it would just say the tickets are off sale and there was no link to that ticket. So then you would have to either go to the box office or call in. And they would just say the words, that show is off sale. So what that when so the more I was very annoyed by this initially, still am, but also I realized why they were doing that, which is because if a ticket is taken up by press industry, they don't get that money for that ticket up front. We've already paid for that on the pass.
Right.
So what they would like to do, and this is where the tinfoil hat comes on a little bit, is to force all the people that have press and industry passes into the press industry screenings.
Yep.
And the public screenings, they would like the public or
to
buy those tickets. And yep. those tickets can go anywhere's. The cheapest ones I saw were like $35, $38.
Right. That's not cheap for a movie ticket, by the way.
No, and that's the cheap. That would be for like basically a movie you've never heard of, probably in a language that is not yours.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to, like, say, the Smashing Machine and you'd like that ticket,
yep.
even just to get in the building, face value was like $110, $120. I heard rumors that resale tickets were going up as much as $200-$400 for a single ticket. And this is kind of what TIFF wants, is that they want these tickets to be sold, not just taken up by press industry.
And so, well, TIFF's an interesting one too, especially when you look at the five big ones, is where a lot of the other kind of big, it's not really open to the public.
Right. Well, this is an interesting point, is that so you have two things kind of converging. You have, they've opened up, let's just say the press industry is a very loose title.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that I talked to, many people who are very nice, by the way, people that I didn't know that you just meet in line or whatever.
Right.
Very lovely, salt of the earth kind of people, not press industry in any way, shape or form. Okay. They are like affiliated with something or other and do this kind of and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
which means that TIFF is taking advantage of basically us paying X amount of dollars, which it's not cheap, by the way. The press industry pass is not cheap. They've also introduced like a premium press industry pass, which is even more money because they don't do certain things. Even from like 2 years ago, there's things that I don't get anymore.
Right.
So they're starting to tier this, and they're just really kind of open the floodgates as like basically if you have like $1,000 and I want to spend, you know, 12 days at TIFF, just go for it. Like, basically, just go for it.
Yep,
you
yep.
know what I mean? And this, what this does, and this, like, this might be, I don't know if this is interesting to anybody, but it does affect how and what movies, you know, people are able to see. Because, of course, a lot of the people I talk to and associate with are, you know, theater owners, programmers from around the country, you know, people that are, you know, filmmakers, which is really important, and buyers, small distribution companies or production companies. These are the kind of people that you want at the screenings and seeing movies, right? I would throw critics in there, though. That's getting looser and looser of a, you know, just basically if you have a Letterboxd account, they'll be like, oh yeah, you're a critic, and give you a press industry pass, which is
my
not
one sentence reviews.
Right. Now, that's not to throw any shade on the actual people, because I did meet those people too that are actually writing reviews for different publications and all that kind of stuff. So, so those people are also really important to the festival experience. But so yeah, so what it does is it inflates the amount of people that are at press
right.
industry, which then means it gets harder and harder to get into even the screenings that we don't have to pay for.
Right.
Right. So, for example, the two films. So there was, so, and this is a perfect TIFF 2025 day that I'll tell you. Okay.
Okay.
So I saw two movies on this day.
Okay.
And you're like, oh my, like, Mike, what are you doing? Only, like, that's rookie numbers. Two movies. Okay, so here are the two movies I saw that day. The Testament of Anne Lee.
Okay.
And No Other Choice.
Okay.
Okay, so those are the two movies I saw. Both of them were press industry screenings.
Yep.
Okay? So just those two movies, just runtime alone, so just me sitting in the theater, No Other Choice is 2.5 hours long.
Yep.
Testament of Anne Lee is 2 hours, 15 minutes long. So that's 4 hours and 45 minutes of screen time. Okay. For both of those movies, in order to get into the, and remember, these are press industry, this is not open to the public, they're press industry screenings. I had to wait in line 1.5 hours to both of those films to guarantee my spot. Right. So that is an additional 3 hours of time that I had to spend in line guaranteeing my spot, because so for example, Testament of Anne Lee was 8:30 in the morning. That's when the press industry screening was.
Okay.
It was at Lightbox One screening on 70mm.
Okay.
It was
I've been to that.
Right.
I believe. Yep.
Yeah. So this is a big deal. It's the only press industry screening of the movie, right? And it being on film in Lightbox One, it's going to be popular, right?
Yep.
No Other Choice. I actually missed I missed the first press industry screening, and it must have been so crazy because they actually, and I didn't see this at all, and they may have done it, but I didn't see it, that they actually added a press industry screening to the schedule.
Wow.
And so they added a second one for No Other Choice. Okay. So that's how many in a really big theater. So we're talking like 400 or 500 seats. So that means there's at least 1,000 people, because my screening was jam packed, full, no seats available.
Yeah, yeah.
So that means there's at least 1,000 people that have press and industry badges, right? So what I mean is, so going back to the Testament of Anne Lee, so that movie was at 8:30 in the morning. So that means I was in line, it wasn't quite 1.5 hours, it was maybe 7:10, but I was in line at 7:10 in the morning.
Okay.
I think that's about, and I was not the first one in line. Mm-hmm. I counted, there was 35 people ahead of me.
What was the breakfast like?
What was what breakfast?
What was the breakfast like before you went? Was it a black coffee and...
Oh, it was, yeah, it was iced coffee.
Peanuts?
It was iced coffee and a breakfast sandwich from Starbucks is what that was.
Yeah. On the go, on the go.
On the go,
yep.
Right? So I stop off, you do the bathroom thing, right, and because you're going to be waiting in line.
Yeah.
And then you grab it to go, you eat on the way because it was at Scotiabank, so I had to walk from King Street West down to Richmond. So eat on as I'm walking. I get there about 7:10. I counted 35, I mean, it might have been 36, but 35, 36 people ahead of me that were already there by about 7:45, 8 o'clock, they weren't letting people even line up anymore. because that was it.
That was it.
So, sorry, that one was at Lightbox, not Scotiabank. The other one was at...
No other choice was at Scotiabank.
Okay. I believe, yeah. Anyway, but no one else was... And so that was the same thing. So essentially that day was almost 8 hours of just screen time and line time.
Yep.
That is not bathroom breaks. That's not food breaks. That's not smoke breaks. That's not nothing. That's just lines, two lines, yep, and two movies is an 8 hour day, right? And I knew I had to do that, and luckily I did, because that was it. Like, I, you know, if you got there too late, they wouldn't even allow you to line up. And that was essentially my whole day is just those two movies, right?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of line waiting, and by the, you know, it's just, and that's early morning too. I'm not a morning guy, but at TIFF, I mean, I'm up 6:45, you know, 6:30 in the morning. Sometimes I'm down.
Gotta put the work in.
You got to put the work in. You got it. Cause some of those screenings are your only one. That was my earliest morning because, yeah, I knew that because it was such an early screening. But that being said, so just to cap off this sort of recap of the, I guess, general vibe of the festival.
Right.
The people are obviously great. Volunteers are amazing. They definitely have, you know, everything is organized in the sense of once you've figured out how to TIFF, it makes sense. But things are always changing. As I pointed out, a couple of things on the website, the way they were doing, being able to get tickets on the same day changed. You know, so they're always changing things in terms of like some of the internal stuff, but in terms of how it actually is run,
right?
Very organized. Again, volunteers are great. The people you meet there this year was great for me. I think I've, you know, just because of other events and other things, I was able to take advantage of being down there with the distributors down there, and I was able to meet with them,
right.
And I'll try in some way, because you're kind of only in this weird sort of L shape or half square shape, so you're gonna run into people just on the street walking from, yeah, screening to screening. So other programmers, other distributors, and that I do want to give some shout outs to the distributors as well, because the other thing I did this year to help with the whole scheduling thing, because I scheduled my TIFF a little differently this year,
okay,
because of the way that it was scheduled. I didn't really know what I knew what I wanted to hit, but I didn't know necessarily how my day was gonna look every day until it was happening. And so,
okay,
how I had a part of how I navigated that was with help from the distributors. So distributors like VVS, Elevation, Netflix, who else? Photon. Who else was Mongrel was amazing. Okay. So these are maybe names that people don't, aside from Netflix, people don't know, but these are Canadian distribution arms that put out films from like A24, Neon, you know, films that don't necessarily have U.S. distribution yet. Anyways, it's the Canadian, that's sort of your Canadian distribution sort of list, I guess, not including things like from Sony and Universal, Warner Brothers. These guys are like the big boys, right? The rest of them, these are the films that are going to win, you know, Best Picture, for example, right?
Right.
So, like, Anora was an Elevation film last year. That's who put it out in Canada. So I wanted to give a shout-out to them because they were very helpful. Sometimes they weren't even able to get tickets to screenings of their own movies that they are distributing. So the fact that they were able to, you know, help me out with tickets really, really was a huge blessing, because I was able to at least get myself to a bunch of premieres, which was incredible. And I was able to, and I know he did text me and say he's going to pop in a little before we end here, so maybe in about 10-15 minutes.
Okay.
But our he's been on the show before, Dalton, Mr. Dalton Pike, may pop in here. He did a day at TIFF this year. He came down for the day, I was able to sort him out with a couple of tickets as well.
Right.
But again, that's not happening unless I have, you know, because then we could divide and conquer. So that day I got to see a bunch of films, and then Dalton got to see a bunch of films. And so the three films that Dalton saw were, I was like, okay, now those are off my list. I don't have to see them.
Right.
Because Dalton's seen them. So now he can critique them and, you know, and I don't need to go and see them. Right. So, because everything is based around, that's the whole point of going to TIFF for me and for us at the Highland is, you know, it's kind of twofold. One of, Is it a film that we are thinking of booking or have booked?
Right.
And what are we getting ourselves into? What was the crowd reaction like? What was the quality of the film? You know, all of this. Was it a smart booking or will it be a smart booking? More often than not, this is on our hit list, so we want to try and book this film. Is it going to be worth booking? Right.
When to show it?
Yeah. Is this going to be an Oscars contender? Should we wait until the Oscars race? Do we want to try and open it in the fall? This is why I'm going that. And then, of course, trying to find films that are a little bit off the beaten path that maybe weren't necessarily on our list or on our hit list, but maybe should be because, you know, they don't have a distributor yet. This is where something like The Testament of Anne Lee was really important for me to see that, because right now it doesn't have a distributor, American or Canadian. So now, since I've seen it, I know what to expect. I know what the movie is. I know what the audience is.
Right.
And when that comes in, it's like, we don't have to hum and haw about it. I'm like, no, this is going to be sweet. There is a 70 mil print available somewhere. Hopefully we can get it, you know, that kind of thing, right? So it's those are the reasons why I'm there. So yeah, I wanted to spend a little bit of time. I don't know if that was just like really boring for people or not, but like TIFF is its own beast.
Well, it's interesting to hear the behind the scenes.
It is, because
I happen to be in Cannes during the time of the Cannes Film Festival 2023. Try to get a press pass. They thought, a student paper was not good enough.
Yeah. And the thing is, yeah, it's TIFF. See, like if you just walk down TIFF, you're like, this is chaos. And it looks like chaos.
Yeah.
Especially the first like 4 days. It's just lines of people. The other way you can get tickets is you can rush line it, which means like sit in a line, and if they release 10 tickets and you're within those 10 people, you can get in. Now, if you don't have a press industry pass, you still have to pay for that ticket,
right?
But the thing is, you're not guaranteed anything. And I'm telling you, that weekend rush lines are crazy. They are long. And especially for all the hit list like movies, like the big movies, it's very hard to get into. So I don't really rush, just because I'd rather go to like a P&I screening of a film that looks interesting and get to see a movie rather than wait in a line for 4 hours. Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it is chaos. It can look like it's chaos. It's also like, you know, it can feel like, you know, I've been going to TIFF since 2007 in some way, shape or form, meaning like I not for the whole time, but I've been to screenings here and there.
Yeah.
A lot of Midnight Madness screenings and other stuff. But this is my third TIFF going for like, you know, the eight, 9 days or 8.5 days, whatever you want to call it. And it is an exhausting endeavor.
I'd imagine.
I mean, especially hustling for tickets, and that's what it is. I mean, there was one day I think I called the box office 12 times in one day. And then I visited the box office multiple times that day. And then I also was on the website. So that's what I'm doing like in between shows.
Did you give yourself a break at some? Did you go to a Jays game?
I did go to a Jays game.
I saw you were on Sportsnet at one point.
I was on Sportsnet. They decided, I grabbed, after the incredible win the Jays had on Tuesday night, the comeback win. I was like, you know what? Let me see if there's like outfield district tickets available. And sure enough, there was. So I grabbed one, $20. So I showed up nice and early when it opened, and I was able to grab like an absolute prime spot,
right?
Second row on outfield district, right in front of the.
It's pretty nice.
It's really nice. Now, of course, they end up losing. But, you know, a ninth inning home run off of Hoffman. Yeah. I mean, this is just a story as old as time this season. But this is not a sports show.
The reliever comes up, you know.
So I did do that.
The starter, he's pitching fantastic. And then some reliever comes up and he's throwing absolute meatballs
just
out there.
Just ninth inning meatballs. Like, this guy is not a closer, okay? Get him off the team. There are teams that are in bottom, like in the 30th in the league, and they have closers that are throwing 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
We are we have the best record in the AL, and somehow we don't have an actual closer. I mean, it's just, don't even get me started on the man. Like, dude, I'm livid. And it's the Toronto sports thing. It happens in the Maple Leafs. Well, it's fine because, like, here's what we're trying to do, and it's like, no. What are you doing? You're the top team. Buy a guy. Buy a guy. Send
always,
a bunch of guys
know.
Down. Trade them. Buy a dude. You just buy a dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, you throw 102 miles an hour. Great. You're our closer now.
For me, it's as simple as, are you in the business of winning or not?
That's right. That's
right. I'm not in the, no other fan is in the business of anything else.
No. And don't forget, you know, we are not there. What is not guaranteed is us being first place in a week. That's not guaranteed at all.
I did go to
a Jays game.
Okay.
And I did get to a couple of industry parties, which was very cool. And I did go to a Midnight Madness, which we will talk about in the second half. But hopefully you guys enjoyed the first half TIFF wrap up, and the second half. We're going to cut to a commercial here, and then we're going to get into some of my thoughts, and I'm sure you have questions.
Yes.
I know you do.
We're getting
of some of the nitty gritty of the actual movies that I saw.
Right before we go for ad, I do want to read this text message that we got.
Please.
We're getting some haters due to our baseball talk. Somebody goes, I think the stream just went down. I think a rerun of Sticks and Balls is playing.
Let's go, dude. I was never invited as a guest onto Sticks and Balls, by the way. So I think my takes are way too hot, and I don't think you guys can
stand. We'll have to get you on. We have a rotating empty host slot.
Yeah, and I my takes are way too hot. I'm not. I think that's why I wasn't
okay,
invited.
Okay, all right. We'll be back after that. Welcome back, everyone, to 94.9 FM Radio Western. This is Outside the Frame, London's only movie talk show. It is a Ryan and Mike episode so far. No Elijah in. We are going to get another third person come in at some point during the second half.
Yeah.
We've just been talking about TIFF.
Yes.
Mike explained a little bit about how TIFF was operating this year. But let's get into
the movies.
The nitty-gritty of it. I have your letterbox up here now, and I'm going to point out a couple of films that I'm interested in.
Go for
now,
it.
Now, looks like from the festival, you had one five-star movie, and that was The Testament of Anne Lee.
Yes, it was.
Now, are you thinking that might be an Oscar contender?
The only way that happens is if it gets a distributor comes out theatrically. Right,
because it doesn't have that yet.
And it doesn't have that yet.
Interesting.
Which is very interesting. I think it was like it's a pretty, it's not divisive necessarily subject matter wise, but excuse me, not subject matter wise, but like the way the film's put together, the style of the film, it's a pseudo musical.
Okay.
In the sense of, it's not necessarily a traditional musical, but the music plays a really big part in the film. It's also like, if you read the description of the movie, you're like, why is this interesting?
An epic fable about religious leader Anne Lee, the founding leader of the Shaker movement, who was proclaimed by her followers as the female Christ.
You're right. And you're like 1700s, like essentially cult movie or religious movie, biopic. Why is this interesting? I loved it. I was very taken by it. I think the sound, the visuals, everything was incredible. Amanda Seyfried is just otherworldly in this movie, in my opinion. I know people are going to be like, yes, this this is a five-star movie, but I think also some people are going to be like, this is like one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But it's in the same, just for context, there was a husband-wife team that co-wrote The Brutalist, and then Brady directed.
So they're behind this as well.
And then in $10 million, shot on film, all the whole nine yards, mainly one big star. They kind of had two. It's basically one star performance essentially.
Right.
This is set up the same way. Both co-wrote. In this case, his wife directed the movie.
Mona Fassbold.
Yes. Fassbold directed this movie. Again, one main star performance in this movie. Period piece. Kind of a biopic. you know, shot on film, same budget, like $10 million. I just think, to me, if this is just my assessment of it, I guess, or my opinion on it. I like this better than The Brutalist. Not that
nice.
I dislike The Brutalist in any way. The Brutalist is great. But to me, you know, the runtime's nice and it's much easier to digest. 2 hours, 15 minutes. I liked a lot of the content and what the plot and story of The Brutalist, but this is definitely much more up my alley, I guess.
Okay.
Like as a whole. I think, yeah. And the music aspect of it, I think, is unbelievable. And this was, yeah, this is my only like true 5-star movie. I would go and see this movie like literally right now again. I would have,
okay.
I actually thought about trying to get a ticket to go and see it again at TIFF, which I've never done, seeing the same movie twice in the same film festival. But I felt like, okay, maybe that's too much.
Right.
There was also a technical problem with the screening I was at. So I was like, maybe I can use that to justify going to see it again. But I think this film's incredible. I can't wait for it to come out. Hopefully there'll be a 70 mil release of it and we can play it at the Highland, on 70 millimeter. But yeah, that was my one straight up five star, no ifs, ands, or buts.
Was there a film of the ones that you saw that really surprised you?
That's a great question. Yes, there was, both positively and negatively. I would
Ooh.
Say. I mean, really, Testament was a surprise.
Yep.
I would say the other positive surprise, what like really. Maybe there's two. Was Nuremberg?
Right. I was going to ask you about that. I'm getting
not that
I'm
I rate
a lot.
Right. Yeah. And then I didn't rate it a 5-star movie. However, I went in with very low expectations.
Yeah.
And I was pleasantly surprised. Now, because it is exactly as advertised.
Right.
It is Russell Crowe chewing up scenery as Goering. I actually liked Rami Malek in it.
Okay.
I think he actually does a great job. The kid, Wendell, Leah, what's that kid's name?
Leah Whittle.
Whittle?
Yeah.
Great. Russell Crowe just eating scenery, chewing scenery in this movie.
Oh, he's good, eh?
But it's, it's a World War II courtroom drama. I mean, it's exact. It doesn't. It's not reinventing cinema or the form. It's exactly as advertised, and
okay.
It's very good. It's
okay.
it's very entertaining. Very, because I was going like, this might be like an MOW, like a movie of the week, really cheesy. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it is cheesy, I guess, in some way. But it does have something to say. It is from the writer of Zodiac, so he wrote it
right.
and directed it.
Only
based
his
off,
second feature film, though. Right?
Yeah, and he was there, and Russell was there, Malik was there. I was able to get to the premiere thanks to Mongrel, the Canadian distributor, and. So director was there, writer director was there, the novelist was there, Malik was there, Woodall was there, Russell Crowe, and this is of note, TIFF is not really, it's a little bit different than Cannes, where Cannes is all about the standing ovation, how long the standing ovation goes.
Uh-huh.
That's not really a thing at TIFF.
Right.
It's more about like the response after and how the audience responds after the screening, right? And how people talk about it or write about it or whatever. Russell Crowe and the movie got about a 5-minute standing ovation.
Oh, wow.
I say Russell Crowe because it was mainly for Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Now, people started to stand pretty early, but as soon as he came out, because he came out, I think, third, so they did the writer-director, then they did Malik because he's the true lead of the movie.
Right.
And then they did Russell, and when Russell came out, thunderous applause, full-on standing ovation. Yeah. So, and I had never seen that at TIFF, mm-hmm. at a premiere. So that one really surprised me in a positive way.
Now yeah, I feel like yeah. I know what your disappointing surprise is.
Well, I'll briefly tell you about one other surprise because
okay.
I didn't really know what, and it has Woodall in it as a lead, with Dustin Hoffman. It's this film called Tuner.
Okay.
And it's
right.
really interesting. It's very Fincher coded. It's a very Fincher movie, but it's not. It's made by this guy who did mainly documentaries.
Okay.
So he's a piano tuner, kind of apprentice piano tuner with Dustin Hoffman.
Okay.
And he has like special like hearing abilities. Like he has this thing where like his hearing's like enhanced. So instead of being like deaf, it's the opposite. It's
so
like
he's
it's
wear, like
sensitive. So
or...
he has to wear like headphones and and like the sensory. He has to be deprived of that the sound. So and he gets confused and he can actually end up passing out and like it can cause deafness as well. I think is I'm not an expert in it. I just watched the movie.
Right.
So he ends up meeting somebody and getting in and also having to kind of take care of Dustin Hoffman's hospital bills. So he starts to get into the business of safe cracking. And so
because
he uses his and it's
yes.
Again, it's not reinventing the wheel, the cinema wheel. It's
a fun genre flick.
It's
would you
just
say?
Yeah. It's just it's a really right down the line like fun. Like you know, I think it gets a little. Me personally, I don't know. I might feel differently because of the setting I was in, but. Of seeing it a second time, but it was a little too down the line for me in the third act. However, it lands the plane very hard in a good way. And Woodall is great. He's fantastic. And the lead, it's sort of his co-lead, I guess. I'd never seen her before. I don't know who she is, but she's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And Dustin Hoffman is really fun. Like I think general audiences are really going to have like a great time with this film. So, so those were like the positives. As our third chair just walks in, but hey, Dalton,
oh, legendary,
yeah. But so those were like the positives,
right?
And Dalton's here because he was also at TIFF for a day. So he was able to see some movies, which is awesome.
So what did you see on that day?
I saw Ballad of a Small Player, the new Colin Farrell movie.
Oh, okay, right.
The director of Conclave.
Right.
Berger.
Eddie Berger.
I saw Train Dreams with, with Joel Edgerton, Felicity Jones.
Both those were premieres too.
Yeah, you know? All three films I saw were premieres, and the last one I saw was called Swiped. It's about the creator of Bumble.
Oh, okay, interesting.
With Lily James. That was a world premiere.
World premiere. Yeah.
Did
yeah.
Bumble come first, or?
Or
I don't think so.
For what? Sorry.
For dating apps.
No, Tinder did. She was Tinder a co-founder of Tinder.
Oh.
And then it was such like a
okay
bad environment that she left and founded Bumble. Oh. So.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we were just talking about surprises, and I think there was one surprise in that group of three that you didn't necessarily think was going to be amazing or going to be like the top film, but maybe ended up being the top film.
Yeah. Train Dreams was like
really
very surprising. The audience loved it too. It has such a good cast, and it's like the story itself is like almost hard to describe. It's just kind of a guy's life, but it's told in like a very beautiful and kind of poetic way and like shot very nice.
Huh.
And it's the same guy who made Sing Sing.
Okay.
And I wasn't crazy on Sing Sing personally. So
no.
This one
Neither was I.
I wasn't like expecting it to blow my mind.
Oh man, I'm looking at the poster for it and it already looks like
looks good.
Looks up my alley.
Yeah, it was great.
A lot of people had this. I was talking to a bunch of people like after Dalton left on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And a lot of people had this as like their top one or two films. Next to like Hamnet.
Well, it's in my top three.
Yeah.
Of what I saw.
Yeah, you only saw three. Yeah. But like people that had been there all week on like Thursday, Friday were saying like, well, Train Dreams is probably like in my top three, or Train Dreams actually is number one. Like, you know, so.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
William H. Macy after they did a talk after. William H. Macy's in this as well.
Oh, nice.
And they were kind of asking him like what it meant to him. And he was like tearing up just talking about like how special it was making this movie. And, like, all of them sort of had that reaction, like, how special it was to everyone involved. And, like, you'll get a little bit of that at a premiere, you know, people will be...
Right.
But, like, it felt genuine, and it felt like this movie really meant a lot to the people involved in it. And, like, I was most excited about Ballad of a Small Player.
Right.
And I found it to be kind of disappointing, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
And I think a lot of the crowd felt that way too, which is weird. It's the first film I ever saw at TIFF was Ballad of a Small Player. So I was really excited. And then
first one's bound to let you down.
Yeah. And then like even I saw people left early.
Right.
And
wow.
Yeah. Which was like, maybe they have another screening to go to.
Yeah,
but
it got mixed to positive reviews, okay. I would say. Yeah, yeah,
I didn't strongly dislike it. It was just not what I wanted it, like where I wanted it to be.
Right. So there's two fighting movies.
Yes, there is. there is The Smashing Machine and Christie, both of which I saw. Christie, I think if it's the right, and I don't know if it's the right time for this movie, but it is coming out at the beginning of October.
Same with Smashing Machine.
Yeah, I think both of them are pretty, or maybe Christie's later. Maybe Christie's in the beginning of November.
Right.
I think it's beginning of October for Smashing Machine. But anyway, if Christie comes out at the right time, it could be a massive hit. General audiences, I think this is a, like,
right.
It is, to me, the real life story is really interesting. Unfortunately for my taste, it was.
You got your review up there.
You have a good Letterboxd review.
Yeah,
for
what it. What is it?
It is Lifetime Channel straight to DVD release.
Yeah. So it's about as sort of, I don't know, washed and safe as you can get. There's one semi, like quasi. Shocking-ish type scene where there's some violence and stuff. Not that the films need it, but this story to me is so interesting, and like the real life story of Christie is so interesting.
Right.
And to me, it just did not. It was just so, like, I don't know, just watered down. Watered down is a good way.
Okay.
Of,
right.
Also, like, I mean, not listen. Peace and love, and I love Sweeney for all the reasons, you know, just, I mean, it's probably her best role, I guess, because
okay.
It's like an actual, like she's acting. Did not work for me at all as a performance. Just did not work. Ben Foster
right.
plays her husband
okay.
slash like manager. Great. But yeah, this film just didn't do anything for me.
Right.
Now Smashing, the audience loved it though.
Oh, okay.
Audience absolutely loved it. Yeah. I was there for the premiere, so that might be, you know, tipping the scale a little bit, but audience loved it.
Now what I've been hearing about The Smashing Machine right now is that the TIFF reaction to The Smashing Machine turns out it's not as weird as early reports claimed it was.
It's mixed to positive. I would say it's very similar to like Ballad of a Small Player, where people are like, yeah, it was fine. Or
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, I kind of liked it. It's interesting or whatever. No one that I talked to was like, you have to see this movie, right?
Right.
If you ask people, it was things like Train Dreams, Nirvana, the band, the movie,
right.
The show.
Right.
It was Hamnet. These were like No Other Choice, Testament of Ann Lee. These are the films that people were like, you have to see these movies. Anyway. So those are the two like fighting-ish movies, which didn't totally work, but on both of those, the audience loved. So this is where like I'll kind of go through very quickly the movies that I saw that are sort of what I would call populist films, right? And you'll see kind of a trend here.
Okay.
It Was Just an Accident, Sentimental Value, Christie, No Other Choice, Roof Man, Nuremberg, Eternity, Tuner, Frankenstein, The Smashing Machine, Eleanor the Great, Wake Up Dead Man, the Knives Out story.
Right.
So that's like probably about half the movies that I saw. I would then throw in like films like Hamnet and stuff like that into that. They're very like, yes, some of them will be awards contenders, but they're very much like as straight down the center as you can get. Very populist.
Yep.
Very for, and I'm not saying that, that they're bad movies. Roofman was a lot of fun. Roofman is like, will make a ton of money. Like,
yeah.
Channing Tatum's great. Channing Tatum is great. Kirsten Dunst is great. That, but why is that premiering at TIFF is my point. Why is that not just coming out in theater?
Right, that's right.
What, you know, it was just an accident. Okay, sentimental value, maybe, but okay. You know what I mean? Like, these are awards contenders. I can kind of see why they're there. But, like, Knives Out, why is Knives Out premiering at TIFF? That's a wild, that's an insane premiere.
The last one didn't?
I can't remember. I don't think so, but
Glass Onion or whatever. Yeah,
maybe
called.
It did, but I just didn't see it. I don't know. But that's a wild, like,
well, I thought Swiped was an interesting one to be there too, because it's like a Hulu.
That's right.
Original movie.
That's another great.
It was good, but
right.
I was like, why is this here?
It
just doesn't blend well. It's weird that it's...
Well, it blends well when most of the... I would say a good half of the films there are those kind of movies where it just feels like it's... Like, if you just put Roofman in theaters, it's going to make money.
Yeah.
If you just put Swiped on Hulu, people are going to love it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like Knives Out is going to, like, Netflix or wherever. It's going to make, like, $1 billion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like I don't understand why it's taking up a spot... On a premiere like list where like of course people are gonna want to go and see that movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like what else is out there that might be need that little extra bump from to get to the award season that's amazing or whatever. Like, you know, it was just an accident, makes sense. Sentimental value, sure. No Other Choice, of course. You know what I mean? These are like more
international ones.
Stuff that, you know, like I said, are Hamnet again, like I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it. But, like, you know, Frankenstein, it's a Netflix movie. It's going to make $1 billion. It has Jacob Elordi in it and Christoph Waltz. I get the whole, again, you know, it is the Del Toro of it all, too. I'm sure he wanted it there. But, like, it's weird that these are the films that are premiering.
Right,
that are
right,
these
right.
These are, and it's not weird in the sense of this is what the, in the sense of that these are the ones with the stars, so then you can get the stars on the thing, and then, you know, you can, but the movies are going to make money anyway. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be other things that you could program that make more sense too, and I think that's why, to get back to my original point before we move on to the last couple things, my original point of like the film festival is kind of turning away from being, you know, the Berlin, the Cannes, the Telluride,
right?
And it is becoming more of a populist, like, hey, there's this new, like big, you know, loud new Netflix movie, mm-hmm. and we're just going to premiere it at TIFF and sell tickets to the public for $200.
Yep.
And that's what TIFF is. And that's fine if that's what they're going for. But I mean, essentially that's what they are now. Right. And yes, there are awards stuff there. It does feature some interesting, you know, I did see like this great movie from like Sweden called The Egghead Republic, which was great. Very odd science fiction comedy type stuff. Like, you know, there is that stuff there. The documentaries are there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So all of the, like the, there still is that programming there. It's just not really, I would say, championed as much as
right.
Like it doesn't have the spotlight like obviously like these other films do that are obviously still going to, like, they're going to make money whether they're at TIFF or not, right?
Yeah.
So the last thing, and I'm sure you're going to want it because I did talk about it in the group chat, and you asked me about, like, did I do anything other than just, like, wait in lines and see movies? Now, I did see my first five movie a day. I saw five movies in one day, which is on the Thursday. And then I followed it up with a four movie day. So my Thursday, Friday, I saw nine movies in 2 days. So,
you started with the five.
Started with the five, yeah. Now, I did go to a Midnight Madness screening. So the last two Midnight Madness screenings I saw were opening night. I didn't go opening night. I could have had a chance to see six movies. I did have a ticket to Nirvana, but I transferred it to a good friend of ours, Walker, who's programs at the Tivoli in Charlottetown, because he's a big Matt Johnson guy. He just, so anyways, it ended up working out and I couldn't see six.
Yeah, yeah.
I just,
six
I
in one day is a lot.
So this, so I saw Aggro Drift and then I saw The Substance last year as opening night Midnight Madness.
Okay.
Now this year I didn't see that. I did go to Midnight Madness, but it was for a film called Love My Son. Now
it's not what it's called.
It's not what it's called.
Can't say it on the radio.
But I can't say it on the radio.
let's just say it's a different way of saying love.
Yes.
Yeah, the harsher.
An expletive.
Yeah.
An expletive way of saying love my son.
And there is an exclamation mark at the end of son. This was, by all accounts that I can, that other people told me that were at other Midnight Madness screenings, aside from Nirvana, which ended up winning the People's Choice, and probably rightfully so. I mean, Matt Johnson is Matt Johnson, so, you know, he's going to win that. Like, no shade, obviously. Like, everyone loves him in Toronto. So, and supposedly that show was, like, you know, otherworldly. People are losing,
crazy.
Like, people are losing their minds. However, one of the most fun Midnight Madness that I heard of was the one that I was at, which was for this movie called Love My Son.
Yep.
Now, are you able to read the small description there?
An X-rated descent into demented comedy and I'm losing my ability to read at the moment, but as a desperate mother drags an innocent stranger into an absurd, filthy nightmare beyond comprehension, an unflinchingly loyal adaptation of transgressive artist Johnny Ryan's joyfully disgusting comic book. Adults only.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was...
Maniacal horror. It took me a while to get that.
This was a riot of a crowd. The crowd was just on point in this screening. People yelling, what?
90. But that's a lot of half star ratings.
Well, yeah, I mean, the people that are rating this movie, I actually didn't rate it for various reasons, but to me, it is an exercise in bad taste, and I loved every second of it. If you're critiquing this movie, and it's the way that it's made or the content in it, I don't think this movie's for you. I mean, you're going to see a movie called Love My Son. So, you know, I mean, this is bad radio, Ryan. This is bad radio.
This is
bad radio. You can't just show us stuff and not read it out. Okay.
What are the reviews?
That's bad radio.
Well, I thought you were going to read it. I wanted you to read it. That's why I highlighted it for you, buddy.
No, I'm talking. you have to.
One of the reviews says, please, I need a lobotomy for the part of my brain that has the memory of this film.
Right. These are the people that I think the movie was actually like made in spite of. Anyone with good taste. You know, like I said, like if you're going into this movie expecting some sort of, you know, elevated, you know, idea of something, it's not. It is schlock, perverted, lowest of the low kind of film.
So I would probably not like it.
No, don't see it. Okay. No, don't see it.
All right.
Yeah, because you'll hate it. 5 minutes in and you're like, no.
So is it actually X-rated?
Well, it's number one. It doesn't have a distributor. This may be the only time that it will ever be shown to a public audience. This movie may never actually come out, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to go and see it, because
for better or worse.
It doesn't have any distributors. It's based off a comic book of this guy, I believe is from France. I could be wrong, but it sounds right. who was there? The director was there. The cast was there. It was the premiere. It did have a B&I screening that, from what I can tell, did not go well. but again, that's just people being dumb. I mean, just look at what the movie's called, and then that'll kind of tell you and should inform you as to what you're walking into. So it may have been this may have been the only public screening that it will ever have. And I was so happy to be able to see it. The vibe and what was going on in the theater, the way that, you know, there was fun things they were handing out before. Everyone was saying the title of the movie. The volunteers would get you to say the title of the movie before you went into the screening, which was a lot of fun.
Yep.
They're like, oh, what are you here to see? And then they would get anyone that had to go in there had to say the title of the movie.
Did you have to say it like loud, like with the exclamation mark?
Yeah. Everyone was yelling it. I mean, Peter, the guy who programs Midnight Madness, I did a really good job actually introducing this movie and really got the crowd like hyped up. There was a whole like sort of 5 to 10 minute like PSA about like bad taste and all this stuff in front of the film that was part of the movie that was just really funny, really set the tone. Everyone was just like it was just like very like vocal crowd the whole time, and most people were there to be grossed out and to have their sensibilities kind of challenged, and it was just one of the most fun, if not the most fun screening I've ever been to. It was just so much fun. So to have that screen at TIFF, I tip my hat to the Midnight Madness programmers and Peter and everybody to get this in the very, very serious TIFF book that has things like It Was Just an Accident, Palme d'Or winner, and Sentimental Value and Hamnet. And in the TIFF book, it does have this this film in it with a great write-up from Peter. So I just tip my hat. This is why I go to the movies, you know, is to see stuff like this that I've never seen before. And
well, there you go.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, we do have to end the show here. But before we go, I just want to say a quick rest in peace to Robert Redford. Yes. Maybe we go around and give our favorite Redford film, either that he's in or he's directed.
Well, a huge shout out to Sundance, speaking of film festivals.
Exactly.
He started one of the most, I guess, iconic and important independent film festivals in the world, which is an incredible thing to do. 20 years, 25 years into his career.
By the way, it's a testament to how big Robert Redford is that even the MLB posted about his passing today.
Well, but there's a real, like,
well, obviously the natural. And, yes.
So to answer your question, I am going to go very straight down the line with one of my favorite, journalistic movies.
It's probably all the
President's
I'll
Men.
I'll throw Butch and Sundance in there.
Yeah.
You can just throw The Player in there.
3 Days of the Condor.
3 Days, yeah.
I'll throw Ordinary People in there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Might as well. The one that I think we've all, three of us probably go back to, is probably All the President's
Men. Absolutely.
It's such an incredible film.
Yep.
And he's an incredible presence in cinema history. So, rest in peace.
Well, that's everything for Outside the Frame. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week as well with our trivia at Holy Diver next week. But thank you all for tuning in on this fine Tuesday evening.